Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Hey guys, it's Candace. And if you've been around long enough, you know that Lena and I are just a couple of small town girls trying to do it all and have a podcast. Listen, this week we had to rearrange some things, so we didn't have an episode to release this week. But we're going to release another Patreon exclusive episode. Don't worry, patrons, we're going to make it up to you. We covered a story on our Patreon about the murder of Ricardo Hibby, one of the most wonderful humans to grace this planet. I was contacted by his adoptive sister not too long ago, and I sent her the episode, and I decided to share it with all of you. This is the story of the senseless murder of Ricardo Hibby. I have for you today is the epitome of senseless.
Mm.
It's awful. And let's start with the victim. Let's talk about Ricardo Hibby.
Oh, okay.
He was born September 17th, 1984. He grew up in the north end of the city of Winnipeg in Manitoba, Canada. Someplace I've never been before.
Mm, yeah.
That area was apparently really rough.
Oh.
It was high in crime and not the sort of place that you would choose to live, but more like the sort of place that is chosen for you.
Okay.
You know, you're born there and you can't really go anywhere else.
Yeah.
Ricardo had a really unpredictable family structure. He couldn't seem to find someone in his, you know, nuclear family that he could rely on.
Okay.
His parents divorced when he was young and they both moved away from Winnipeg, kind of leaving him to fend for himself.
Oh my goodness. I couldn't imagine.
I know. Ricardo kind of bounced around a little bit before moving in with a friend and his single mom.
Okay.
So she opened her home and her arms to Ricardo and became like a mother figure to him. I mean, she nurtured him. She told him to do his homework. She gave him rules. He had a curfew, a bedtime. You know, she kept him fed and safe and clothed, which is, it was a stability that he had never known before. Ricardo did amazing in high school. He was very smart. He was studious, and his grades reflected the effort that he put into his coursework. He graduated from West Kildonan Collegiate High School in 2003. I graduated in 2003. Yeah. Okay, Ricardo.
He's right at our age.
I mean. So shortly after, he asked his friend Richard if he could shadow him at work. So Richard owned his own company doing like building houses, like his own construction company. And Ricardo just kind of wanted to learn some trades. He wanted to learn everything.
Good for him.
From pouring concrete to framing to plumbing. He just kind of wanted to know it all, see if he could fall into one of those trades. Richard was like, sure, come on. And Ricardo was like, you don't even have to pay me. I just want to learn.
Oh, wow.
So, which shows the type of person he was.
Yeah.
And Richard was like, you know, just come and I'll teach you everything I know. And Ricardo was such an amazing employee, very devoted, really reliable. And he had this knack for business. It was the business side of things that he just kind of was natural at. So Richard ended up making Ricardo his partner.
Wow.
His business partner.
Wow.
That's how amazing he was.
That is so cool.
I know. Ricardo was very successful in real estate in that business, and he was on track to have a very lucrative career. In December of 2010, Ricardo met a girl named Candace.
Oh, hey, Candace.
Through mutual friends. She described him as looking like a tough guy, but basically he was like a gooey marshmallow inside. Oh. He was just so friendly, and they hit it off right from the start. He signed his name on Candace's arm the night they met.
Oh.
Which, you know, he was like, you're mine, but in a cute way, right. Not in a creepy way. And she thought it was endearing. She talked about how she went home that night and her mom was like, what is that on your arm? And she's like, oh, and she got all giddy, you know, and she just knew she had found her person.
That is so cute.
Yeah. After a year and a half of dating, Candace gave birth to their son, Junior. And if anyone thought Ricardo couldn't get any better, they only needed to watch him be a dad.
Oh.
Yeah. He loved his son. He spent every single moment that he could with his son, you know, when he wasn't working or wasn't showering or doing whatever else. He was just doting on his son.
Oh, I love this guy.
Yeah. A couple years later, on December 14th, 2014, Ricardo proposed to Candace. Wow.
You
said
that. I
am so sorry to myself and every other Candace out there that just was like the next step. Mm-hmm. It felt like they were finally going to just solidify their little family.
Yeah.
He was religious as well. So it was important to him to provide that cohesive family to his son and to Candace. Ricardo had another love, though, of his life.
Oh.
He was drawn towards giving others a second chance.
Oh, we've heard this before. Yeah,
like he'd been given as an adolescent.
Yeah.
He had this property that he owned. You know, he acquired this property from, you know, the business he was working on with Richard, his friend.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you know what? I would love to turn this into like a house for youth.
Oh, wow.
And like host young adults, young men who were struggling. So he renovated this property.
That is so fantastic. I love that.
It is. And he knew there was just so many young guys, especially in that area. Because like I said, he didn't leave that area.
He had been there, done it. Yeah.
He just thought, I'm going to stay here and help. I'm not just going to peace out.
Yeah.
And go live a better life somewhere else. He wanted to stay. Ricardo and Candace decided to postpone their wedding so that he could focus on this project. And I'm sure there was, you know, some money involved where they were like, well, we can just move the wedding to next year.
Yeah.
And then
by that time, we'll have more money saved.
Yeah, we'll have more money saved and you can start this project. And maybe he could even make some money from like the government or something
okay.
for, you know,
providing housing
for troubled youth. I'm sure there's some kind of government thing
assistance program. Or, yeah.
I would hope, because it seems like he went into this, he quit working in the real estate with Richard,
uh-huh,
and he did this full time. Oh, so he knew it was his calling, and I assume that he was financially stable enough to do that.
Oh, okay.
This is what he was meant to do, though, help people, mm-hmm, in his very own community. And to him and his supportive fiance, it was worth waiting.
Yeah.
So when the home was completed, he officially was approved as a youth care home, and three kids were placed in his care.
Oh.
I'm not sure their ages. They were minors at the time, so that information was not made public. But Ricardo was now 34, and his life was taking full shape. I mean, he was fulfilling his dreams, mm-hmm, in all areas of his life. His passion for helping troubled youth, and now he's back into wedding planning mode. You know, he's getting excited for that so he can make Junior's mom his wife. It was all just coming together for him.
So sweet.
But
oh,
that's the part of the story that, you know, everything changes.
Yeah, has a turning point.
Right. In December of 2018, Ricardo, Candace, and their son went to a hockey game, which was something they did quite often together. Ricardo had season tickets to the Winnipeg Jets. and this outing would become significant for them because it was the last time they would spend an evening out together as a family. Just days later, their lives would change forever.
Mm-hmm.
On December 17th, Ricardo went to help his former business partner, Richard, with a construction project that he was working on.
Okay.
So this was something that he seemed to do from time to time. Like, even though he had kind of moved out of the real estate business, he was still around to help. So he's on this job. And around midday, Ricardo told Richard, I'm going to go ahead and take a break. I'm going to go home, grab some lunch. I do need to run an errand or two, but I'll be back to finish up later. And he said goodbye and went back to the group home where he housed these young men.
Okay.
I didn't really get the picture of if he lived there,
mm-hmm,
or if he just kind of supervised,
okay,
their life. I think they were teenage guys. I assume that he lived there, but
Well, I know a lot of group homes here in America, they have hosts.
Some
take shifts. Mm-hmm. So some will stay the night, some will stay through the day, but maybe it was something like that.
Yeah, and it probably was, because he seemed pretty comfortable with that house,
yeah,
to go back and have his lunch there and, okay, check on the kids. So Ricardo was on the phone with an attorney when someone knocked at the door. He didn't end the phone call, though. He just was like, hang on one second. Oh. There's somebody here. He had his phone in one hand. He reached for the door with his other. And as soon as he opened the door, this angry guy's voice just started fussing and hollering at him, trying to get inside the house. Ricardo blocked him and wouldn't let him in. So the visitor stabbed him. The line on the phone was still open. This attorney who was on the other line,
yeah,
could hear all this going on. She hears this arguing. She hears this, get out of my house. She hears this thud, and then it's quiet. And so she's like, Ricardo, Ricardo.
Chills.
And when he didn't respond, she just immediately called police.
Yeah.
Ugh. And it really didn't take long for them to get over there. It's just that his injuries were not compatible with life.
Yeah.
And he was pronounced dead at the hospital. He just lost too much blood too quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, if it would have been any other place, you know?
Yeah.
Back at the home, police were trying to figure out what happened. Violent crime in this part of town was not surprising at all,
mm-hmm,
but they were shocked that something like this would happen to Ricardo.
Yeah, such a great man.
Yeah, he was very well known and well respected in the community. You know, he had this group home. Law enforcement knew him. Something else that they found surprising was that two of the three boys that lived in the home were upstairs
oh.
when Ricardo was murdered.
What?
Yeah.
Did they hear or see anything?
I mean, they must have had headphones on or something because they didn't even know what was happening until police came.
Oh, this is 2018. So, yeah.
Headphones, TVs loud. Of course, investigators spoke with these kids and asked, did they have anything to do with it? Did they know of any reason why someone would harm Ricardo? But they had no idea. I mean, they just were as stumped as anybody else. Mm-hmm. He had no enemies. Police asked if anyone else lived at the home, and they said, yeah, there's one other guy that lives here, but he wasn't home today. Again, because he was a minor, I'll refer to him as CH, which is what they refer to him as in the court documents.
Okay.
So police wondered if Ricardo's group home might be a front for something else. Like, is there drugs going? Because there was heavy gang operation in that area. And so they're thinking, like, did he
contribute to any
start this group home as a front for a drug ring?
Oh, or man.
Whatever. They're just trying to make sense of this because this was strange. But they quickly shut that down because, like I said, Ricardo was known to law enforcement. He worked with law enforcement to help these boys.
And try to clean up the streets.
Yeah, try to clean up the streets. They knew what he was doing, and there just wasn't anything dirty. Mm-hmm. They tried looking into everything, and there just wasn't anything nefarious.
Yeah.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
With nothing much to go on, investigators were ecstatic when they saw cameras on the property.
That is usually helpful.
Yeah. There was a camera on the outside of the group home. They do later mention in the trial an indoor camera, but I don't think it captured anything useful because they really just talk about the outdoor camera.
Okay.
So the outside camera caught a man dressed in a black coat with a hood on his head running up to the door, stabbing Ricardo, and then running away and leaving him to die. Ricardo can't be seen in the footage. Really, it's more of like how this guy is sticking his arm in the door and gesturing. And that's about it. A man in a black coat. You couldn't tell.
Wow.
You know, because the footage was really grainy. It just, but they were thankful for a start.
Yeah.
Now they know what he was wearing. They know about his height, you know?
Yeah.
And they didn't forget about CH, okay? They still wanted to speak with him.
Right, okay.
He just hadn't come home. I mean, even after Ricardo's death was all over the news, he didn't return.
That's a little sus.
That doesn't look good.
No.
That doesn't look good.
I mean, was he one to not come home? I mean, did he stay gone for long periods of time?
You're dealing with troubled youth.
Okay.
I mean, so they're probably thinking...
Rhetorical question.
Yeah. I mean, they're probably thinking they don't know. And who knows? Maybe the other boys in the group home didn't really know him that well.
Okay.
You know, I don't know the dynamic, but they didn't necessarily think that CH did it, but they were like, why wasn't he home?
Where was he at the time? Why has he not come home?
Yeah. Yeah. So it turns out he has school and a job. And he was at neither of those places that day.
Okay.
Red flag on the play.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a term?
I mean, flag on the play. I don't know about a red flag. Maybe.
Sports. I'm a sports fanatic. Can't you tell?
They have yellow flags. They have red flags.
Well, this was a red one on the play. Now, news of Ricardo's death, like I said, was all over the media. It was spreading through the community. It was just so sad. People really loved him. And everyone was just as confused as law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Like, why him, though?
Yeah.
Neighbors and citizens came out and they held a candlelight vigil at the footstep of the door where he was murdered and just put candles all over the place and his picture and... It was just so sad. CH ended up showing up at the police station.
Okay.
And said, I guess y'all are looking for me.
Yes. Yes, we are.
And they're like, yeah, where have you been, sir?
Mm-hmm.
They told him that he wasn't at work and they knew he wasn't at school. So where was he the day that Ricardo was murdered? And he said he had spent the whole day with his girlfriend, Trinity Moore. They were going through a rough patch and fighting a lot. And he just said, you know what? Screw everything else. Mm-hmm. We're going to work this out.
Oh,
so okay. He didn't go to school. He didn't go to work. He just stayed there to try to work things out with his girlfriend. He said he'd been staying there actually ever since.
And he just didn't want to come home because
He wasn't exactly hiding out. He just didn't want to go home because he was
with her.
Well, Ricardo was murdered.
Yeah, I mean, at the house he was living in.
So, I mean, I can't blame him for not wanting to go back home. And
that's valid.
Who knows? Like, maybe the other boys were moved somewhere else. Maybe he couldn't go back there. Yeah. So, for whatever reason, he just stayed at her house. When police knocked on Trinity's door to verify CH's story, she said, yeah, I mean, CH spends a lot of time here, but he was not there that day.
Oh.
Yeah, she's like, And so the detectives are standing there in the foyer speaking to Trinity and asking her questions, and they're listening to her. Okay, they're listening. But they're suddenly distracted by a blood smear on the front door.
What?
Yeah. They're like, yeah. Do go on, you know, keep talking, but they're like, do you see that? Like the one guy's nudging the other guy.
Okay.
And so they're like, okay, well, thank you. But, before we go, do you mind if we just collect this blood on your door?
And did you not notice
she,
this was here?
She was like, I didn't even know that was there. She didn't even know what it was. I mean, she acts like, sure. I don't know what that is.
Oh.
So they collected this unexpected evidence, potentially, and were on their way. Now they know CH is lying to them.
Right.
Okay. I mean, they suspected. But why would he lie, you know? Or is she lying? Because what is this blood on her door all about? Since they'd checked with him the first time, CH had actually returned back to the group home. So investigators didn't have to look very hard to find him, you know, to follow up with him.
Yeah.
They confronted him about lying and said, you know, where were you? You weren't at your girlfriend's. And he was like, what? And they're like, yeah, she's telling us that you weren't with her. And she hasn't even seen you for days, dude.
Interesting.
He's like, seriously? What? She said that?
Oh.
And they're like, yeah. And so now the investigators are kind of confused because this kid seems genuinely confused.
Okay.
So they're like, yeah. And he was like kind of miffed that she would tell police that he wasn't there. He was like, I just don't know why she would tell you guys that. And he said, you know, she does take medication sometimes that makes her forget. So she must be confused about the dates.
Okay.
He might have expected that comment to aid in his alibi.
Sure. I mean.
But I don't think it did. I think it just made him look worse.
I'd say, yeah.
So police soon learned that there was someone else. Someone completely unknown to the victim that they should be looking into.
Oh.
It was a guy named Kane Moore. Okay. Trinity's brother. He'd been visiting her recently, and on the day of Ricardo's murder, he witnessed an argument between Trinity and her boyfriend, C.H. I'm not sure how he witnessed. Okay. I don't know if he heard it or if he learned it from his sister, you know, through the grapevine. He gets wind of this argument. Okay. She's fighting with her boyfriend. And instead of just staying out of it, like your brother or my brother would do, they'd be like, oh, I'm not getting involved in that.
Yeah.
He lost his mind.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. He barged into her home and tried to find CH. He was finna tear him up.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm. CH was there, but he was hiding in the back bedroom. And
I'd be
Trinity,
hiding too.
Yeah. Trinity was like, he's already gone. He left. He went home. And he's like, well, give me his address.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So she gives him the address and he left. Trinity finally ended up telling police the truth that CH was there that day. She lied to protect her brother. And I don't really get how lying about CH being there protects her brother. But
right.
Now investigators know that they need to find Kane. And fast, because okay. they've already put this puzzle together.
Yeah.
Hang on.
I know what she's doing.
Where is it?
Well, I don't have my fake cigarette.
I knew it. I did. I know you.
It probably is in my car. Let me tell you about Trinity's brother, Kane Moore.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Hold on to your butts. He was 21 years old, and he was about as useful as a screen door on a submarine. He was a very violent individual. Lena, you're good at guessing games. Would you like to guess where he lived before Ricardo was murdered?
At the group home?
No. He actually lived at Stony Mountain Prison.
In
Manitoba.
Oh. Okay. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. 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 He was living in prison.
Okay.
Because he was serving a sentence for a violent crime. He was let out of prison on statutory release just 2 months before Ricardo's murder.
Wow.
Oh, but it gets worse.
Okay.
I know you can't imagine it getting any worse, but listen close. Let's rewind to August. Let's rewind. I'm going through puberty. Let's rewind to August of that year. Just 2 months before he was released on parole, Ricardo was alive, thriving, making the world a better place. Kane, however, was the prime suspect in the murder of another inmate.
Oh, at the prison.
At the prison. That's right. He was in prison for being violent and he couldn't even chill.
No, because you can't.
Right. The parole board knew that Kane was about to be charged with second degree murder. And they let him out into the general population anyways.
Sounds like a great idea.
In the parole documents, it states that he's a serious risk to reoffend and they let him out anyways.
What? How? How? How did this slip through the crack? These are things that you do not let
this
slip through the crack.
This doesn't feel like it slipped through the crack. It feels like it stood up and walked out the front door. Well, and everyone was like, goodbye.
Yeah. Have a nice day.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. So upon his statutory release, he was ordered to stay in a halfway house. But after a week or so, he was like, nah, I'm not doing this.
Okay.
And he left.
Of course.
Yeah. And at that point, he was officially considered to be at large and in violation of his parole. Because you can't just do what you want when you're on parole. You can't. Mm-mm. Reminder, it was known to authorities that he was in violation of his parole mm-hmm. before Ricardo was killed.
So this could have been prevented.
Could have been prevented three times over.
Yeah.
Trinity initially lied to the police, as we know. Her boyfriend was also pretty upset that he lost his mentor. So she was like, I'm going to come clean. So she described the black jacket that her brother was wearing on the day of the murder, which was a match for the jacket that the assailant was wearing in the surveillance footage of the murder. So when she sent her brother away to, you know, go find CH, supposedly, he returned a short while later and his hands were covered with blood.
Okay.
That blood smear on the front door was Kane leaving behind Ricardo's blood after brutally and senselessly stabbing him.
So Trinity did know where it came from.
Yeah, she did know where it came from.
She probably didn't know it was there. Otherwise, she would have cleaned it off, right?
Seems like it.
But she knew where it came from.
Mm-hmm. A warrant was issued for Kane, his arrest, because, well, he was in violation of his parole by also murdering someone while on parole. But he was in the wind.
Yeah.
Seems like maybe, I don't know, put out a warrant for his arrest at the onset of him being in violation of parole, like before he gets a chance to murder someone. But who am I?
Yeah.
Who am I? Well, I guess I'm human because Ricardo's family and friends were also pissed. Okay. They were reeling some days, numb other days from their loss. Mm-hmm. And they're like, why our guy? Why our guy?
Right.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
When they found out who was suspected of Ricardo's murder, they were like, I'm sorry, who? Who? They had no idea who he was. Total stranger. to them and to Ricardo. No connection at all.
Interesting.
All they knew that was that this monster was roaming free and they were trying to pick up the pieces and move forward without Ricardo.
Mm.
I just can't imagine, you know, sometimes these things do take time, you know, getting justice for the family,
right.
But having to grieve and worry that that person is still out there.
Right. Why?
It's
where?
Just, yeah.
Yeah.
Luckily, about a week after the arrest warrant was issued on January 6, 2019, police got a report that there was a drunk guy sleeping in the park.
Oh.
When police responded to the scene, they saw a man laying on a park bench, probably sleeping off, you know, late night of drinking. They arrested him for public intoxication. And Jimmy Crackcorn,
mm-hmm.
if they didn't find an ID inside his black coat
oh.
that said he was, in fact, Kane Moore.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Here you go.
He may have been in the wind, but he didn't blow too far.
Here's your guy.
Not sure why he was hanging about, but he was taken to the station literally kicking and screaming.
Oh.
he kicked an officer who okay. was trying to help him out of the police car.
There's another charge.
Yeah, exactly. Slap him with the charges. Mm-hmm. Once they got him inside and sat him down for questioning, he denied being involved in the murder. Had no knowledge of it. They showed him footage of the murder. Mm-hmm. Said, is that not the exact jacket you're wearing? He's like, no, it's not me. And he lawyered up. This wasn't his first rodeo.
Yeah.
Okay. He wasn't even going to sit there and put on a performance about how, oh, I didn't do it. Oh, I don't know him. He was way too deep in. He knew it. He
yeah.
was caught on camera and he's like, nah, just call my attorney.
It's not even worth it to him to try to
no.
fish his way out.
No. So police had originally thought that Ricardo was mistaken for someone else because they couldn't imagine that this was a targeted attack.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't it. Kane killed Ricardo because he was just in the way. Kane knocked on the door asking to speak to CH. And I'm sure Ricardo sees that this guy wasn't there to exchange pleasantries,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so he wouldn't let him in. He was like, no,
can yeah.
you please leave? And Kane wouldn't leave. He tried to barge into the house.
He Ricardo was already fuming.
Him. And he pulls out the knife that he brought and stabbed him 3 times.
So he couldn't find CH, so he was
going to
find somebody. Wow.
What a waste.
Yeah.
Kane Moore was charged with second-degree murder in the death of Ricardo Hibby. And finally, December 20th, 2019, Kane was charged with second-degree murder for the murder of Adam Manias, the inmate who he killed
okay.
in prison. What was the holdup with that charge?
Right.
What took them so long for that? Like, I don't understand that. Anyways.
But so they knew he did it.
Yeah.
They already knew.
He was about to be charged before he was released.
Oh, okay. Well, that is so stupid.
Yeah. Had they done that in the first place, had they charged him with it, Ricardo would still be alive.
Just do your job.
Unfortunately, they gave Kane the opportunity to plead guilty to assault on a fellow inmate, and he got 18 months. 18 months for killing another inmate.
I have no words.
Yeah. Do you see why I was searching for my cigarette?
18.
So, Kane Moore's murder trial for the death of Ricardo Hibby began September of 2020. Oh, 2020,
yes.
The year of the beast.
Mm-hmm.
Manitoba had suspended all proceedings due to the coronavirus since the beginning of the outbreak, which started in the spring of 2020. But in September, they were back in session. So they held jury selection in a convention center, actually.
Oh.
Everyone was ordered to wear masks and they were all spaced out per COVID recommendations. The Crown's star witness at the trial was Kane's own sister, Trinity Moore.
Oh.
She knew her brother was angry when she sent him off to find CH, and she witnessed him coming home with blood all over his hands. She swore to that in a statement to police. But when she got on the stand, she changed her story yet again.
She was scared of her brother.
She said, no, I didn't see him that day.
She was scared of him. She didn't.
And prosecution was like, what? You're really doing this right now.
You're lying under oath. You're
doing this right now. They're like, okay, you're going to sit here and perjure yourself in front of the jury, like, whatever. I don't know if she ever got charged with anything, but she should have been. So Sergeant John Taylor testified about the surveillance footage. You know, if they're going to have her lying on the stand, they're going to give everything else that they got, which they feel like is enough. He explained to the court that no matter how bad the quality was, the guy who's on that footage is sitting in that chair. And at around 2:30 in the afternoon, a man in a heavy black coat with a hood walks up to the front door of 622 McGee Street, knocks on the door, and stabs Ricardo. And the jury could see that black puffer jacket for themselves. That indeed did match Kane's jacket. Oh, and speaking of the jacket, it had Ricardo's blood on it.
Oh, I was gonna ask you when they found him in the park, like, I bet it had dried blood on it.
Had his blood on it.
Interesting.
Funny how that happens. Sandra Bracken was the legal aid attorney that was speaking with Ricardo at the time of his murder. She testified that Ricardo's last words were, "Hey, man, this isn't your house. Get out of my house." And she heard the voice of another man and then a thud, which she believes was Ricardo collapsing.
Oh, my goodness.
The pathologist testified to his autopsy of Ricardo and described the fatal injury as being a 12-centimeter, likely single-edged knife wound to Ricardo's heart.
Oh.
All in all, the jury found Kane guilty of second-degree murder, and he was sentenced to life with a chance of parole after serving 15 years. Again, what are we doing here?
Oh,
no. There's actually a news report headline that says 15-year prison term for killing group home manager. Like, they're like, yeah, he got life, but nah, he really got 15 years because he's eligible for parole in 15 years.
For nothing. Like, he killed him for nothing.
What are those 15 years meant to do? Is that his punishment, or is that a deterrent so he doesn't do it again? Are they expecting him to be rehabilitated in good those behavior. 15 years?
What? No.
So after all of this, after everything he's done, they're going to consider him for parole again at some point.
No. That's absurd.
I would say I have no words, but I do have more notes.
Okay.
According to a report by Cameron McLean and Jillian Taylor with the CBC News, offenders who are incarcerated must be released after serving 2/3 of their sentence.
Must be.
To this I say, what isn't a name? Would a sentence by any other name hold up in the prison system? Like, listen, Canada. Okay, I'm not giving you crap because we do it here in the US too. The UK does it, and I know other countries do it too. But, you know, where we sentence someone to a fake sentence.
Yeah, fake.
But really we mean a lesser sentence. Can't we give the victim's family an actual number? Can we not do that? Can we not say 25 years? You will serve 25 years.
Yeah.
Like, can we not say that?
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
I know.
I'm signing it into executive order right now.
I'm calling President Trump right now.
I'm signing it right now. Anyways, I digress. Corrections Canada, which is an institution, conducted an internal review, likely because they were feeling the heat from the public. I mean, heat is probably an understatement. And they concluded that there was, you know, there's just nothing found to indicate that Kane would go on to murder someone once released. But there were risk factors.
Oh.
How can they say that?
Who are these people?
Like, the several contributing risk factors, end quote, that they referenced in the parole documents as being a risk to offend.
And
would that not be indicative of his proclivity to further violence?
Absolutely.
Am I going crazy? No, or does risk mean what I think it means?
Yeah, maybe I just don't understand their vocabulary.
Right. I know we're all speaking English here, but it doesn't feel like we're speaking the same English.
Yeah.
You establish a pattern of behavior, which becomes risk in the future. And that is actually recidivistic behavior. It is indicative of future crimes.
Absolutely. What?
I don't know what else to say. I'm going to gouge my own eyes out.
Can we talk to these people? Like, who are these people that make these big decisions?
I don't know.
Are they voted into office?
I don't know. I don't know how this works in Canada. I really don't. But
I don't think they know how it works in Canada.
They don't even know how it works. So Corrections Canada released a statement to the press that said, unless it is recommended by the correctional service, they have to release an inmate at the end of their sentence or after serving 2/3 of it. Anyways, they said, quote, by law, the PBC, the Parole Board of Canada, cannot act unilaterally in conducting a detention review for an offender's statutory release. They continue, quote, in this instance, a detention review was not put forward by CSC, the Correction Service of Canada. So they're saying, look, we'll update our policies. Okay. So
what?
They're saying these people over here decide if he's let out. These people over here decide if he has to stay. But they're going to have separate hearings.
Okay.
Okay.
But then this person gets to decide.
But then they're like, you know what? Yeah, actually, we will, in fact, update our policies.
Okay, thank you.
Because that does seem counterintuitive.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, next time if an inmate has been involved in harm to another or death, we'll recommend a second review before this inmate is statutorily statutorily released. Mm. Is that a word? So now the warden makes the final say.
Thank you.
I mean,
thank you. Is that what we're supposed to say?
I don't know. I'm at a loss. As you can imagine, this brought absolutely no solace to Ricardo's family and friends. Next time does nothing to bring him back.
Right.
Losing Ricardo was like losing the bottom Jenga block. You know,
yeah.
It just, he was who everyone else relied upon. Not only were they not impressed by the announcement of the new policies that were going to be implemented, it just highlighted the fact that Ricardo's death was 100% preventable on multiple occasions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I hate that this case is going to leave a bad taste in all of our mouths. I don't want this story to be about injustice, because it really very much is. But let's remember, what a guy.
Yeah.
What a guy Ricardo was. I mean, he was just the good in the world. When you think about the good in the world, he was it. He made his own little piece of the world better, and everyone who loved him was better because of him. Who knows what more he could have done
right
for his community? Who knows how many more lives he could have saved if only his life wasn't violently taken?
Right.
He recognized how blessed he was in life despite the cards he was actually dealt.
Yeah.
He realized that someone saved him and he wanted to do the same for others.
I love that.
Give them hope for the future. His fiance Candace was up to her eyelashes planning her wedding to the man she loved, solidifying the gift of their family that they created together. Their son Junior started playing hockey.
Aww.
And he, you know, his dad would just be so proud that started playing hockey, because he was young when his dad died. He'll never get to attend any of his son's games or practices, but Candace has slipped right into Ricardo's role as hockey wingman. You know, she finds joy in seeing Ricardo through their precious son. And I'm sure they have their good days and bad days, but they probably still feel his love every day.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. How could you not?
I know.
I love when things happen. It wasn't a coincidence that he was on the phone when it happened.
Yeah.
Like, and she was able to hear and call 911 right then. That's amazing.
I wonder if she hadn't, if he hadn't been on the phone, like when he would have been found. Like,
if she would have just hung up and be like, oh, well, I mean, I'll call him back later. Mm-hmm. No, that's really interesting.
Yeah. And she was a legal aid attorney.
Right.
So that just shows what kind of line of work she was in. I don't know. None of the reports specified why he was on the phone with an attorney. But I mean, he ran a group home for troubled youth. I mean, maybe he was asking legal advice, custody. Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, she was providing him free
advice, free legal advice.
Legal advice. Thank you very much. My brain stopped working, just stalled. it's just.
But I mean, all the things that he could have done and he would have done if he was still here, it doesn't take away from what he did.
I know.
And what he did is beautiful. I mean, he touched a lot of people's lives, and they wouldn't have been helped, or their lives wouldn't have been better if he wasn't here on earth at that moment. So
I would love to know what those kids that lived in that group home are doing now.
Oh, like, yeah, that would be interesting to see.
They've gone on to do something amazing with their life.
Oh, yeah. And
but because they were minors, you know, we won't know their identities.
True.
Those are sealed, but
wow.
Just heartbreaking. But
yeah, what a guy.
What a guy.
Thank you for telling his story and telling us, telling the world about him. Yeah. That's rest in peace. And I hope Candace and her son will, or I hope they're thriving and loving life. And yeah. Well, that was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. Get connected with us by becoming a free member on our Patreon. Or for just $5 a month, you'll have access to bonus episodes, discussion groups, and much more. If you can't afford $5 a month, we get it. Inflation, am I right? Please consider leaving us a positive review and rating wherever you listen.
And don't forget merch. Support our podcast and show the love by sporting t-shirts with our latest designs, or grab an evidence bag to keep the chain of custody for all your valuables. Don't forget to follow our show on your favorite streaming app so you never miss an episode, and get photos and updates on our Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or our Cousins on Crime Facebook page. Have a case suggestion? Email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.